Good afternoon. Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor. Today we're going to be talking, we have a very important interview coming up at 5:30. The former Prime Minister of Rwanda, Faustin Togerimungu, has made an announcement in Belgium that he intends to return to Rwanda after all these years, and we want to learn why he has made this decision, what he expects to encounter there. We're going to ask him about the fate of the presidential candidate, the woman Victoire Ingabire, and what is going on in the country. So that'll be at 5:30. We're also today going to be talking to Ted Schmidt, who will be part of a Hiroshima commemoration, which is going to be on the 8th, at 8th of August at 6:45 p.m. And it's going to include reading of the Toronto and Hiroshima peace declarations. There will be prayers led by Ted Schmidt and the Toronto Area Interfaith Council, and also the daughter of former NDP leader Douglas is going to be. I'm not looking at my notes, so I'm not getting my name straight. But I have Ted Schmidt. What do I need notes? Are you there, Ted?
I am, Phil. Yeah.
Ted, I'm really proud that Toronto does this each year and other cities around the world. I do think, though, it needs the increased publicity because we live in a world of nuclear weapons, and the people of Hiroshima and Nagasaki are the ones who can tell us the most about what these weapons do. Tell us about your involvement and what will be happening on the 8th.
Well, I was part of this as a speaker 30 years ago, and it's still been going on. A small group, I think it was begun by survivor Setsuko Thurlo, wonderful woman who this year, she was blown right off her seat as a 10-year-old schoolgirl in Hiroshima, and decided when she came to Canada, emigrated, that this should be memorialized. So it's been going on for a long time, and Setsuko is going to be in Washington this year. So it's an attempt to draw people's attention to August 6th to 9th, talk about days of infamy in human history.
Yes.
And, you know, that's just a wonderful event to keep people's eye on the prize. The prize is peace. And,
yes.
You know, given the tenuous situation we have in our world today,
yeah,
it's always important to remember this and to make people aware that this is the finger off the trigger is not guaranteed. We have to be constantly making people aware of this. So it's been going on for a long time, and as you said in your intro, for 100 cities, I'm sure.
Yes.
And we've had the Peace Garden down there for many, many years as a place where people gather. Father Massey Lombardi, when he was with the Peace and Justice Office, which has been shut down, shuttered for many years. In the
Peace
Catholic
and Justice
Church.
Is gone.
Yeah, but the Peace Garden is going to be relocated down there at City Hall, Nathan Phillips Square, and it's a good place to meet for quite a somber occasion. And
by the way, I have to say, I have to apologize. I think I said the date wrong. I think it's August the 6th.
Yeah, that's
August
the date.
August the 6th. I hope I didn't say 8th, but it's the 6th.
You did say 6:45. The 6th. And
Shirley Douglas is going
Shirley
to
Douglas?
The actor and activist. Is
oh,
going to
yeah. Shirley Douglas has always been a great friend.
A chip off the old block.
Of the peace movement. She is indeed. And I think it's a wonderful thing. Always a small group of people, and you are doing your bit to let people know. To please join us if you can. It's always a good time too. Yeah. You know, down there it's pretty quiet. August days, but they've always meant a lot to me. You know, because of my involvement in the peace movement.
It is. And by the way, it's just like something very valuable to us culturally, that it is marked, and it, whether the size is large or small,
right,
knowing that there's a conscience being expressed is kind of an important part of the human record. And by the way, Ted Schmidt is on the human record with a book, Never Neutral, Story of a Teaching Life. And where can we get the book, Ted?
Well, the book's out now. It's I'm just taking a number of copies over to Hamilton tomorrow for a wonderful woman. Mm-hmm. Trudy and George Down send it out for people who want the book sent to them. That seems to be the commerce today. TheBookBarn.com, I think it is. It's online, so
okay.
You don't have to leave your house. But also in Toronto,
mm-hmm.
at Book City and religious bookstores, Broughton's and Joseph's. So,
well, I hope people will get that. It's a very important book. It's also easy and humorous to read. And I do hope you'll just keep on writing. You don't need an excuse of a memoir. Just go ahead and write books for us, Ted.
I hope to keep on as long as the time I have here is that we want to use it. We've been so blessed in our lives to meet so many people that have made peace over the years. Have been great inspirations to me.
You have a great account in there of the Berrigans, who really are, should be put on the path to sainthood.
I think so.
And speaking of that, I'll get to the last question, which is that we have a new pope, and you say that my understanding is that he is really opening up, and particularly he is addressing the issue of the bishop who was assassinated in El Salvador.
Yeah, I'm just doing an interview tonight on Global at 6:30 about this. He's got people's heads spinning even after 4 months trying to bring the Catholic Church back into the 21st century as a viable player in the world's search for peace. We were set on the right road with Vatican II, encouraged us all to be peacemakers, but the last 15, 20 years haven't been too productive, and this pope has
very charitable.
Within 4 months made some great symbolic gestures of humility and reaching out to the poor and telling the young to shake up the church. And now his remarks off the cuff, but thought out on gay and lesbian people.
Well,
why exclude them from the priesthood when the former pope... Yeah, that's good. So
we're gonna by the way, Ted, we're going to have to do regular talks with you just to update us, because obviously the Catholic Church is going through a kind of a healthy rethinking of matters, and you're on top of it. So we hope we can get back to you on that.
And absolutely.
We look forward to seeing you
on
August the 6th at 6:45 p.m. at City Hall.
And you'll hear me on CIUT that day, too.
Terrific. All right.
Okay, Phil.
Win-win. All right. Thank you, Ted.
Great talking to you. Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Ted Schmidt. By the way, we're going to now, we hope to get in touch with someone who is at a demonstration here in Toronto, because there has been a shooting on a streetcar. The city is people all over the city are very upset, asking for some accounting of this. A young man, 18, 110 pounds, allegedly with a knife, has 17 shots. You know, when you just look at the facts, it makes you wonder about how things are run. And there is apparently a demonstration going on, and we'll be talking to someone. I want to take the moment, though, to say happy birthday to Rod Thorne, who is a friend of CIUT and a friend of the Taylor Report. And we always appreciate all the help he does in helping make this show possible. And so, Rod Thorne, happy birthday. And now I think we're joined by Jacob Leibovich. You're there, Jacob.
Hi, Phil,
And you're at a demonstration. What are they demonstrating about?
Well, it's a group of folks that have come together, I think, mainly via social media. And they're protesting the shooting by the Toronto police of a young man named Sami Yassin late Friday night, early Saturday morning. On the Dundas streetcar.
And is it going to be a march, or what's going to happen?
It's on the Facebook site, it said it was going to be a march. It seems that the cops have cleared, The way it developed, it looked like, was that somebody called for a demonstration, some of the groups in Toronto, and then the family, the Yatim family, asked that there be a rally that begins at Dundas Square, at the corner of Yonge and Dundas, at 5 o'clock.
Ah.
And the intention was to start there and then march over to the site of the killing and then on to 41 Division. But it seems that the cops have cleared out Dundas Square. They're not allowing the protesters to stay in the square. And so right now, there's a couple of hundred of us, and we're marching around Dundas and Yonge.
Dundas and Yonge.
Yeah, right now we're occupying the intersection of Dundas and Yonge.
Wow. Well, that's very interesting. Because of this problem with venue and decisions, these people were making them rather quickly. What do you expect is going to will there be? It'll be an sit down for a while, and then are there going to be speeches? Is there literature there?
There's not a lot of literature. There's definitely one leaflet going around that says stop the cops from killing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, makes the point that there didn't need to be a death in this case, and that the cops are quick to shoot young, particularly young people.
Yes.
It does seem like there will be a march eventually, but I think it's too soon for folks to leave the site because, you know, people have been told to come down for five o'clock. I did notice that even Sammy's sister, Sarah, tweeted earlier today in support of the event, saying that she would see her friends down here at 5:30. So I think the intention is to stay put at least for the time being.
Well, can you give us an estimate? Like, how big is the gathering there?
I'd say there's a couple of hundred people here. There's definitely some folks that spend some time putting together makeshift placards, slogans like "Patience Before Decisions," "Shame," and "Rest in Peace" for Sammy. And then there's actually been quite a bit of attention paid to some of the other killings by police over the years. One of the placards makes the point that there were 9 shooting deaths by the police of mostly young people of color between 2000 and 2009, and that since 2009 there have been 18 shooting deaths by the police.
Wow.
And, you know, noting the escalation.
Well, Jacob, we are very grateful, and it's very impressive that people come out so quickly and that the social networking does give people an opportunity to express their feelings and to be seen protesting this an event that probably should have easily been prevented, let's put it that way. Anyway, thank
Absolutely.
You. Thank you very, very much.
No problem.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
That's Jacob Leibovich, who sometimes co-hosts with us, and he's also the son of the great Peter Leibovich, who is at this point now, with his passing, has become one of the legends of the labor movement and a work in NDP and the peace movement and active on the issue of Palestinians. Just a all-around tremendous guy, tremendous family, actually. Now, just to remind you, there's going to be we're going to be speaking to Faustin Twigiri Mungu, the former Prime Minister of Rwanda, a little later. There is also an important event coming up on July 31st, and it seems to me pertinent that there's going to be a commemoration of the life of Harriet Tubman. It's, I believe, the 100th anniversary of the death of, if I have it right, of Harriet Tubman. Harriet Tubman, if you do not know, was a outstanding militant abolitionist figure who helped inspire Americans and African Americans, and she became a legend around the world opposing slavery. And when the Civil War began, she actually became she did intelligence work. She went behind Confederate lines, and she carried a rifle. She was an outstanding individual. She lived in St. Catharines for a time when the American authorities were looking at for her, when she was helping. I shouldn't use the word help, when she led people to freedom throughout the 1850s. So they're going to gather at the Union Station, 11:15. Go to Union Station at 11:15 on July 31st. That's right, 11:15 p.m. because they want to take the subway to everyone together to Downsview, where there is a new poem has been written by George Eliot Clark, which will be read, and there will be speeches commemorating the life of Harriet Tubman. That's going to be on July 31st, so the event at Downsview will begin at exactly 12. It'll be the anniversary of the passing of the great Harriet Tubman. By the way, I hope there's a plaque in St. Catherine's at her home, because that's where she used to do some of her work. She met with John Brown, the man who attacked Harper's Ferry and, as many believe, started the American Civil War by striking a blow against slavery. Also, there's going to be a talk on August the 8th, Thursday, at a different book list by Dave Austin, and it's a book launch. The title of the book is Fear of a Black Nation, and he will analyze the issues of the Black Power movement of the 1960s, which is still rolling along and had tremendous impact on everyone's lives. That book by Dave Austin will be, there will be a launch, and that was Thursday, August the 8th, a different book list, 746 Bathurst. I want to make sure we mention on the program that Henri Alleg has passed away at the age of 91. He died on July 17 this month, and Alleg is very important to the debate about torture, the use of torture and waterboarding, and this kind of new culture of violence that broke out amongst the American ruling circles after 9/11. And Alleg is notable because he wrote a book called The Question. He published it in 1958. Henri Alleg was himself a first of all, I'll tell you, he was a newspaper editor. He was a communist. He was in Algeria, and he was arguing for the right of Algeria to self-determination. The French authorities did not like that. First of all, they closed the paper. He had to go into hiding. Then they wanted to find him. They did. He was arrested in 1957 by the French paratroopers, and then he was tortured. And he was arrested with a good friend named Maurice Audin. And Maurice Audin was a very gifted mathematician and also a radical man. And the two of them had worked together on a paper in Algeria. He was, Henri Alleg was waterboarded. He was given truth serum, by the way. And he was also, they used electric shocks. Amy Goodman on Democracy Now! Did an interview with him. If you go to Henri Alleg, that's spelled A-L-L-E-G, and you look at the his story, you go to the bottom, you can link on to the interview with Amy Goodman in Democracy Now!, asking him about torture and people who defend it. By the way, a very important point about Mr. Alleg, he did not cooperate. And they used waterboarding, which is a form of drowning. They can kill you with waterboarding. It's their choice. They applied electric shocks and gave him truth serum, but they didn't get anything from Henri Alleg. And you have to read the book, The Question. It is, to my mind, it's a minor, one of those, what they call a minor classic. Many people don't wish to know what's in that book. It's a brilliant book. It's an honest book, and Alleg suffered. And Alleg did not break, but he said the key to it was that he chose to die. He left it in the hands of his torturers. He said they basically had a routine where, at a certain point, they knew it was up to them, and they simply had to decide themselves what they were going to do. And they chose to put him in a prison, throw him in a prison cell. By the way, his friend Maurice Audin was never found. He and was murdered by the paratroopers. That would be the general conclusion. Alleg's story is very, very important. The book is called The Question. I'm very pleased to know that using truth serum didn't get anything out of Mr. Alleg. That book is also quite well known because the introduction was written or prefaced by Jean-Paul Sartre, who, to him, the question was the following. We fought the Nazis. The Nazis killed us. The Nazis tortured us and tried to make us reveal things. And we said, those of us who survived them, he said to one another, you see, we represent civilization, and we would never do that. And Sartre said, now 15 years have gone by, and it seems the French paratroopers are behaving like somebody that we used to fight, and France has to be better than that. France has to denounce it. Alleg made the point that when he was asked by Amy Goodman, she said, well, what do you now, conclusions you draw about Obama and others in the waterboarding? And he said, well, I notice a distinction. He said, the French never admitted that they tortured because it was too awful to ever say that they had tortured, so they denied that they tortured. But he said, I notice the Americans have a different approach. He said, the Americans say... We're against torture, but we don't know that waterboarding is torture. And he said, well, I experienced it. It is torture, of course. And he said, the French could not bring themselves, since, by the way, I mean, they'd been under Nazi occupation, and many, many Frenchmen had been tortured to death. So they could not admit, he said, they wouldn't. And you can make interesting kind of moral distinctions of what was going on in their minds. However, you must read the introduction written by Jean-Paul Sartre. And I urge you, by the way, to go to Amy Goodman to at the site, Wikipedia, Henri Alleg, you can find the Amy Goodman interview. You really, everybody should be aware of that. Everybody should read that book. And, of course, also we have the passing of a great prize fighter who turned into a great story, an important story, Emil Griffith. Died on July 23rd, and he was suffering from pugilistic dementia. He had been the world's welterweight champion, one of the greatest fighters that ever got in the ring. But his story took an odd or an interesting turn as people began to discuss his sexual preference, and that is, and of course, he didn't wish to have the attention. However, it came out a story that when he fought a man named Benny Kid Perrette for the world's welterweight championship, it turned out a tragedy because Benny Kid Perrette got caught in the ropes and was, of course, the job of a fighter, as they say, is to keep punching. So Emil Griffith kept punching, and the referee did not step in for various reasons. I don't think there's any point in examining that aspect, but as a result, Perrette died in the ring that night. Well, he died at the hospital later. And it came out that Benny Kid Perrette had made a homophobic remark to Emil Griffith before the fight. And then people claim that that motivated Griffith. Frankly, let's be clear about this. Emil Griffith is one of the greatest fighters that ever lived, and he was in the ring to win, and I think he fought like a fighter. It makes a kind of a nice text for if you want to write a novel. But by the way, an opera has been written, and it has just been performed in St. Louis using a combination of jazz classical music. I'm sorry, I don't have the name of the director and the composer, but it's called Champion. And Phil Conlon, who is an authority on music, and I have been talking about this, we're going to do our best to see if we can get more on that story. But at any rate, it's a great tragedy. The story of Emil Griffith and the fighter Benny Kid Perrette is a great human drama, and there is an opera that has been produced, and it's bless his heart. He lived to be told that they had made an opera about his life. And so that's, we regret the passing of Emil Griffith.